The Around the NFL Podcast. Made a football move.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with some different heroes. Dave Damashek, Chris Wessling, and another member of Dave's crew coming in a little later. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great.
What a pleasure. I appreciate your enthusiasm, for one. Wes seems less excited about it, but I'm going to match it.
Wes is a kind of like, you know, down-home folk. He keeps it relatively level.
Key is on the island. You never get too high. You never get too low.
Exactly.
Thanks to booze. Nice and even.
You know who's more excited than anyone right now behind the glass? TD. We're going to go to him a little earlier than usual today because our big crossover episode, Handsome Hank, is going to come here. Henry Hotchin at any moment once he gets out of his Jaguar and comes upstairs, which will give us our first true crossover episode between the Dave Damashek football program and the Around the NFL podcast. And TD's excited.
Forget Sony, forget Marvel, forget Spider-Man. This is where it's at. You know,
uh-huh.
I know you guys are up to. Yeah, you guys up to.
By the way, let's calm down with Spider-Man. By the way, I'm seeing in the news another new Spider-Man.
Yeah, there is.
You know, he had enough shots at this point.
I know, I agree, but
This is ridiculous. Is this a brand new one?
It's not going to be Andrew Garfield. It's going to be a brand new Spider-Man.
But this is a reboot. Are they going to do the whole?
Well, they're not going to
origin
from,
story
well,
again.
No more origin story.
No
we
more
get
stories,
it. We yeah. get it with the spider bite. And Mary Jane and the dead uncle. Enough.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're.
This is ridiculous. This is now veering into Hulk territory.
Mm.
They made that Hulk picture three times in about 5 years. It feels like with three different leading men. Now we're on the.
What are you nerds talking about?
Check to be accurate. The Hulk that Mark Ruffalo and Ed Norton played, same Hulk, just different actors.
No, the point. No. Yes. And then there was also the Eric Bana one.
Well, yeah, those two are different.
All right, enough. You know what, I shouldn't have brought it up because I knew TD would send it down a wormhole. All right, so big show today. Henry, like I said, is going to come in a little later. Dave, thanks for joining us.
What a pleasure.
You know, we'll get to a little later why perhaps
Mark
it's Sessler a surprise.
Is,
yes, we should mention Mark downstairs, actually. First of all, Greg is on paternity leave. Good job by Greg. Mark lost his voice. That voice, that deep voice that
we don't know how it happened
keeps us steady. Yeah, it's a little suspicious. He also has a bandage on his hand. It's like one of those bandages that when you go into the interrogation room and the police are like, so what happened to your hand? See, and it's like, oh, I burned it. And it doesn't stand up at all.
I can confidently say he wasn't with me when all of this happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good sign.
I can attest, though, that there were good times had in Phoenix, Arizona, the downtown area there in Phoenix, Arizona. While Kansas, you were off doing your fancy parties at night trying to report back on those. Mm-hmm. Now, was that your desire, by the way? If you missed all of Hanzus's written pieces,
yeah.
They were terrific. But I felt like
it started off as a great gift from the assignment gods. And by the end of the week, it was very much a job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I
was sick by the end of the week.
I could
barely made it to
sniff that one out a mile away.
Yeah.
Oh, thank. Not that anybody approached me about it, but if they had, no way.
Just real quick, though, full-on production note. It is a two-part episode. ATN's going up and DDFP right after. Two parts. Listen to both.
Glow in your eye.
It's going to be awesome.
Excited. Exciting. All right. We're excited. Not as excited as TD, but we're excited. This is a big show today. We got a lot to get to. So we're going to talk about the free agency crop at quarterback, which is always grim, but it's fun to look at because it's so crazy. And then we'll talk about maybe some other options. Wes, you wrote a nice piece about a certain player that's not a free agent quarterback that maybe would be somebody for teams to target. We'll get into that. Our off-season forecast series is off and running. We're going through the entire league, 32 teams, breaking down what's needed, what's on the horizon. We have the AFC East now complete, so we'll hit the AFC East. Wes wrote a Bills piece. I wrote a Jets piece. I believe Kevin Patcher wrote a Dolphins piece, which will hit.
And Henry will be here to talk about
and Henry
his
will
beloved
be here.
Dolphin.
Hank will be here, and we'll hit on the Pats a little bit, even though Greg's not here. But before any of that, TD, let us do some news, please, sir.
I demand a trial by combat.
Wes, what's that from?
Guessing Game of Thrones?
Wow, good job by you.
Good job, Wes.
Thank you.
I watched Walking Dead the other night. Boy, is that show the worst.
I do not watch that.
Enough of that. Oh,
the Better Call Saul, though.
Did you didn't watch that. Was it worth it?
Very good. Very
heard
really,
some buzz
I'm
about that on Twitter. This
I'm
is
not
a television
excited
show.
Excited for that one.
It's very good. Really? I love Bob Odenkirk, too, so it's a really it's off to a nice start. All right, let's start with Peyton Manning. A little Peyton Manning update. We don't know for sure if he's coming back, but NFL media insider Ian Rappaport reported that Manning is working out in New Orleans with an eye toward the 2015 NFL season. The 38-year-old quarterback wants to see where he is at physically in the next stage of his evaluation process. He's expected to work with a strength coach, and I guess it all comes back now to whether he feels right. We've heard in past years he needs to get cleared by a doctor, and that's the only thing that would stop him from coming back. But now there's an added layer to it, which is does he feel like he can still do it? Dave, you're famous for taking shots at Manning. I would imagine that you think he should be hanging it up and not coming
well,
back.
No, I don't think I'm famous for it, but I do think word has spread sufficiently to Peyton Manning's camp since he turned down doing an interview with me. So I like that. I
can't
like
really blame him.
He and Kobe are the sorts of guys. They sit atop the sports world, and yet they are aware of dopes like me who say this, that, and the other about them.
Did you have any evidence that it was because they had heard that you were critical? Or is it just because?
Maybe he just thinks I'm dumb. Yeah, maybe he just doesn't care. But he did. He said Peyton was informed. He said, "Who are these interviews with?" One was with Dan Helley.
Right.
The second one is with Dave Damashek. Peyton said, "Oh, kill the Damashek interview." That was the apparent.
Wow.
Helley is a hotter JFK though, so maybe that factored in too. It's hard to say.
Yeah, maybe
he
likes that
Helley
sound. Yeah, he knew it would be it would be anticlimactic to kibitz with me. The question also is with Peyton Manning, the other wrinkle is do the Broncos really want him? The key,
of course they do.
Of course they do. Don't know. How do we know? How do you don't know?
How about because John Elway came out at the season-ending press conference and said, "We definitely want Peyton Manning back."
But the implication being we want Peyton Manning if he's Peyton Manning. If he is subpar, how subpar does he have to be for them to say, yeah, this is probably not a great move to bring back a 39-year-old
still
man.
Has a pulse?
I mean, you know, I know that's easy to – I mean, that sounds like you're you know, cynical about what one Mr. Brock Osweiler might be capable of. But, you know, listen, this is a guy who's learned at the knee of Peyton Manning for the last couple of years, first of all. He was, a second-round pick coming out of Arizona State? Nice big kid. Has a rifle for an arm. We don't really know how he stacks up. But if Peyton Manning is not what he was in September of 2014, I don't know. Does John Elway really want to turn the franchise over to a 39-year-old man? As we see with Kobe Bryant, whose name I just invoked, if you get into that age range, those little nicks that you get put you down for a couple of weeks. They can't really afford to go into a season where the health of the QB is in question. Like, he may be all right, he may not be. I can see them moving on.
You bring up Kobe, and he's a perfect example of why Manning should come back to me, because Kobe last year should have been the year Kobe realized he shouldn't have come back, but he came back. And his body gave out, and he wasn't playing well. And then he decided to come back again, and then it seemed like ego is driving it, or maybe an inability to let go of his playing days. And I think right now Manning is not at that level yet. I feel like he owes it to himself to come back one more year and see how he feels, see how he can play. And then if he really is a marginalized player, I think he would definitely know to step away. I don't think Kobe was able to do that, and that's why we have this sad Kobe right now.
We can only guess at how much of Peyton Manning's declining production down the stretch was the result of injuries, but we can also infer from John Elway's press conference, and he has a much better read on this than we do. He's closer to him, he has the medical reports, and he left no doubt that he wants Peyton Manning to come back.
I heard the comments, but that's also, I can spin that's the politically sound move to make at that point, not knowing anything about Peyton Manning's well-being at that point.
But he didn't really leave much room for doubt on what he was saying.
he's saying, of course we want the Hall of Fame or one of the all-time best.
Not
back.
Only
That'd
that, but we'll consult him on the coaching search and everything. I mean, it was pretty clear that they have big plans for him as long as he wants to come back.
I just am saying, I think that Peyton Manning come back. I think Peyton will come back and will be the QB. I just don't know that that's going to be the greatest situation in the world, especially they'll keep Demaryius Thomas. But let's say Julius Thomas goes. Demaryius Thomas, to me, is the key, obviously, for that offense. But, you know,
don't you think Peyton Manning's the key for that offense? Not Demaryius Thomas?
You're not going to believe this. Henry Hotchin, Handsome Hank, notorious DOP, who just walked in the room and sat down, but Dave is speaking negatively about Peyton Manning.
Really? I'm confused. Whose podcast is this? Is this Dave's or is this yours?
I think the full-on crossover event.
This is...
I think Dave has squatter's rights now.
This is historic right now.
It is.
Right. This is what TD was excited about. Now that Hank is with us... This is it. This is the first time there's been, I guess, 2-2 from the
What'd you call
shows.
It, a mashup?
It's crossover.
A crossover.
Yeah.
Remix.
It's kind of like when Richard Mulligan and Empty Nest went over from Golden Girls.
That's your reference. Not when Mork from Ork showed up in Happy Days in Al's Diner. You go
Empty Nest. What
you go Empty Nest.
Yeah, but it's kind of like that, yeah. So anyway, that is the Peyton Manning we just talked about.
Right.
He's probably going to come back.
He's definitely coming back.
Why is that negative, what I said? I can't help that the man's 39 and was hurt last year.
I'd be inclined to agree with Dave. I think it's fantastic that Peyton Manning's coming back, but he's not. We know that by week 10 he'll be back. You know, every year he's got a little bit worse.
Yeah, just like you predicted 3 years ago, by week 4 his career would be
all
over.
All right, far off.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see what Brock Osweiler has in store for us.
Well, you don't know. I mean, listen.
Mark Malone learned at the knee of Terry Bradshaw. How'd that work out?
Well, not so well. But let me tell you something. Brock Osweiler, right. Well, it's not a guarantee of success to play underneath a Hall of Fame quarterback. I do, though, think that the pieces are there. What if the Broncos kept Demaryius Thomas and Julius Thomas, C.J. Anderson, a good offensive line, Emmanuel Sanders, and the rest? I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, in this day and age, it's unfair. A big word these days, this week or two, or last week or two, is conflate. Let's not conflate those two. Let's not conflate Brock Osweiler's situation with Mark Malone's, this diminishing roster in Pittsburgh in another era 30, 40 years ago. Brock Osweiler is a young, talented guy who might come in and
How's your podcast going?
This is how our pod works, Dave. We do news items, multiple news items, and we jump from one to the next. All right, let's move forward. The Seattle Seahawks are waiting on Marshawn Lynch to decide his future. In a radio interview on Tuesday, Seahawks GM John Schneider said that the team is waiting for Lynch to decide on whether he will retire or return. Here's a quote. Whether or not he wants to play next year, I can't answer that. I don't know if he knows at this juncture. So we're talking about Peyton Manning and whether he wants to come back. Marshawn Lynch, to me, I would be less surprised if Lynch retired than Manning did, because he's a wild card.
He certainly is, yeah. I mean, who knows? He could do anything. He may change his mind between now and the season 2 or 3 times as well. But I would expect that Lynch will come back.
He's playing.
He likes the money.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing.
He can pretend
he likes
everything
the money,
else.
Yeah.
He doesn't like the attention and all that stuff, but he does like
and
the money.
Perhaps that was the whole thing during Super Bowl week when you notice he was not talking. He was talking whenever he was getting paid for it. He was making his comments.
You know what I thought was very interesting was what talking to our pal Mike Silver there. My assumption had always been that it was a team-motivated benching. You know, he had a couple of those in the season, you'll recall, especially in the first quarter at Arizona in a game that they needed to have in order to steal the division. I thought that the Seahawks were trying to shame him. Maybe he ran afoul of Pete Carroll, and so they put him down for the first quarter. No, Mike Silver says, that's what Marshawn Lynch does to remind the team how valuable he is.
Wow.
Oh, you think you can make it with Turbin and Kristen Michael? I'm going to sit myself down. Let's see how well you do. He does that in-game. Are we sure that people are in love with that? I mean, that's what led me to say I don't know that the Seahawks are going to make the playoffs in 2014, and the 12s got on me for that. But that's kind of not a great situation that you have a star player, you know, the tail wagging the dog, basically benching himself in key games for you. Are we sure the Seahawks are desperate to have that back and wouldn't prefer to ride with capable Kristen Michael and then go get, at the end of the first round, Todd Gurley out of Georgia. That would be devastating.
I love the idea of a backfield with a guy called Christine and then another one called Gurley.
For that alone, they have to do it.
Congruence.
Hey,
yes, we're sure they want him back.
Moving on. Richie.
I mean, listen, they don't love that trouble he makes in the locker room.
They want him back.
Richie Incognito is back in the NFL, gentlemen, the Buffalo Bills.
So happy for
a month. I guess it was about a month after Rex Ryan says in his introductory press conference they want to build a bully. Your boy, Hank.
But wait a
Richie
second.
Incognito, maybe the most infamous bully in the NFL's history or recent history, joins the Bills. This was met with a lot of criticism upon Buffalo, and the Pagulas apparently met with Richie and see that he's a changed man. So,
oh, well, that's good. They met with him. So
the Bills, who he really this comes down to. Well, it's a personnel issue. They have some of the worst guard play in the league last year. So now they're taking a chance on a former Pro Bowler, but a lot of baggage here.
I think it has to do with Greg Roman runs a power blocking scheme, and they didn't have those guards in Buffalo. So they bring in Richie Incognito. But my only takeaway is here, I don't ever want to hear Bills fans ripping on the Patriots for their lack of ethics or morals or anything like that. Come on. Give me a break bringing in Richie Incognito.
A year and a half? He hasn't played football in a year and a half. He's on the wrong side of 30.
I don't know what the Bills are doing.
In his last year, by people who measure the quality of offensive line play, Richie Incognito was not an especially strong performer. Yes, what is the point of this? What are you getting out of the PR nightmare? What is the upside of bringing in Richie Incognito?
Well, but the flip side of it is, I mean, what have you got to lose? This is a guy who hasn't played for a while. As Dan says, your guards are terrible. You might as well bring him in and see what you've got, because you're probably going to draft those positions and you're going to sign a bunch of free agents. You can build your roster as big as you want. If he's still on the roster when it comes to opening day, then I would say suggest the Bills probably do have a deal.
By the way, Greg Rosenthal, who's not here, I think he might be back for Thursday's show, but I am starting to pile up some sandwiches in our little wagers. First, and I don't know if you knew this, Dave, that we had a wager, Greg and I, that J.J. Watt would get at least 8 MVP votes. He ended up getting 13. Greg thought he'd get 2 or 3. I got a sandwich off Greg there. And then we made another wager months back that Richie Incognito would play again. Greg said no. I said yes. Chomp, 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 Jackson Market.
Mazel tov to you on both of those nice victories.
Thank you.
Want to stick my neck out. I want to do some sort of a Peyton Manning / Brock Osweiler sandwich bet with Chris Wessling.
I'm all over that.
Let's do it.
Even know what it is. How are you
care.
All over it? What do you mean
care.
You're all over? How about this? How about how good is the team going to be? If Peyton Manning is their starting quarterback.
They won't make the playoffs if Brock Osweiler is their starter.
Do they make the playoffs if Peyton's their QB?
Yes.
I like
that's
that.
Pretty bold. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement to make about a 39-year-old man.
So you're covered either way on this wager, no matter who the quarterback is.
Here's the thing. I don't want to get into a thing, because since you're doing your news thing.
Right, but go ahead.
And I get distracting. But I just want to tell you something very quickly. Wes, the Patriots are going to win their division again.
Right.
The Bills are interesting.
No, they're not.
No, they're kind of.
The Bills aren't even the least bit interesting.
They're interesting.
With EJ Manuel,
who's playing quarterback?
The Dolphins are interesting. All right, so fine.
5-11.
Definitely the Patriots. The Chargers are going to be good next year.
Maybe the Chargers usually go 9-7.
The Chiefs will be interesting next year.
Did they get a new quarterback?
The Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be good next year.
All right, about
the Baltimore Ravens probably will be if a couple things break right for them in free agency. The Bengals are still around. I don't necessarily see a guaranteed playoff.
I don't understand it. What's that?
Because they only got—I don't know if you heard—they only get—they only allow 6 teams from each conference to go to the postseason. It's not like they endlessly
have. I don't know if you heard.
Oh, you're halfway
decent,
and that's why this is a good proposition. Because if it was a no-brainer, you wouldn't be willing to put a sandwich on the line.
So what's the proposition? What is it? Let's get to it.
If Manning it depends on who's the quarterback.
How about this? Not in the top 5.
If
Peyton Manning is the quarterback, they will not be in the top 5 seeds.
No. In the playoffs. That was the proposition.
I'll
get scared now, Dave.
Dave's backtracking now.
How am I backtracking? All right, fine. They won't make the playoffs.
Okay. I demand a trial by combat.
I don't know where that fits in. Moving on, the Cleveland Browns. All right, so there it is. There's a sandwich wager for Dave and Wes. So we'll be tracking that. Whoever.
Drafting Brock Osweiler.
What's that?
Proposition.
Proposition.
We don't do wagers.
Yep. Excuse me. Proposition. Whoever runs that Twitter account, please update it, and we appreciate your business and service. The Cleveland Browns are zeroing in on Marcus Mariota. NFL media's Albert Breer noted Tuesday that Browns GM Ray Farmer, who's got his own issues right now, has, quote, shown a liking for the Oregon prospect. Is this what football fandom is now? Every February we have to talk about the Browns drafting a quarterback in the first round.
Farmer showed a liking for every quarterback in the draft last year, according to numerous reports. Well, I wouldn't put much stock into this.
Well, he took one though.
Right. But let's remember, this is the time of year where people take a liking, and then it just is meaningless.
Yeah, but now's not a good time.
You can't to believe anything that we're putting out about who likes who.
But you can't see the Browns now panicking and bailing on
themselves. Oh, I can see them collecting a bunch of quarterbacks who aren't suited to the NFL.
But there's a difference between collecting quarterbacks and using another high pick on this guy. Who
would Mariota even fall to them?
Yeah, I think he will be there.
It's so hard to say, but he could. They have two first round picks, so they could even package that and move up. I mean, they are in a weird spot. Everything's going wrong with that franchise. I think all bets are off when trying to figure out where they're going
to
go next.
Oh yeah, they'll use your eyeballs. Look, when you watch him play, when he tries to get the ball more than 20 yards downfield, the ball just blatantly appears to die in the air. It just doesn't seem to have an NFL arm.
They've already got one of those. Like, why would you want another one of those guys?
No wonder why Sessler's jumping ship to the Patriots.
What about your Jets there, Hanzus? They're another prime candidate to
We will get into that during grab our offseason forecast.
Oof. Ooh.
Segments.
Egad. It's
segments,
grim.
TD. Segments. How about that? How about structure over on this podcast?
The Jets.
I like it.
The Jets and Bills, we sometimes go with structure. Other times we let our hair down and we just dance.
By the way, TD, I know there are times where you want to kill me, and I know you actively want to kill Dave a lot of times.
When you come up with my drops like that, like you just did like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. This is an opportunity for you, by the way, to put some mustard gas in here or something.
No, it's
and just move forward with
after the full-on crossover podcast, which I'm excited for, then maybe that.
After it's over.
Yeah.
The last one ever.
Finally, Ed Sable, founder of NFL Films, passed away on Monday at the age of 98. We got some football heads in the room right now, in Wes and Damashek, two history guys. We got Hank, not American, so he fell in love with the game from afar.
I didn't, and I actually fell in love because of NFL
Films.
I had a stack of VHS videotapes from NFL Films I would buy from some store. I don't even know where I got them from, actually. That's bizarre. Hmm. And I had like 50 of these videotapes. Crunch Time, NFL Films presents Crunch Time. You know, all these type of things. It's great.
I have a tradition now, you know, with this, when we go to these Super Bowls, and I've been lucky enough to take my dad to two of them, is that I play the NFL Power and the Glory music in our hotel room when he comes in, because that's what he grew up on, is that old NFL Films music that scored so many of their programs early on. So that music to me, and we're listening to it now, is that's when I think about that old NFL film stuff, and that's really that helped me fall in love with football as well.
I think my biggest takeaway from Ed Sable is that when the 1960s began, he was selling overcoats, and the NFL was overshadowed completely by Major League Baseball, was behind boxing and college football in popularity. And they hire him in 1962. He becomes what Sports Illustrated calls the best propaganda arm in the history of corporate America. Mm. And by the end of the decade, football has put all other sports in the dust and is number one in eyeballs, television revenues, and excitement for the game. It's just a more entertaining sport thanks to NFL Films.
Yeah, for guys of a certain age, and I guess we all fit into that window, to me, it is the number one reason why I became more than, as much as I loved all sports, devoted to pro football because of NFL Films and Facenda, and the Sables wrote that language that Facenda would employ, you know, from the Raider stuff, you know, I swoon over the Steelers talk, you know, there are 27 teams in the National Football League, and then there are the Pittsburgh Steelers, all scored by that glorious music and the look of
Sam
it and everything.
Spence.
Yeah, I mean, it is the number one. External sorts of influences for making you love something. Right. That fantasy football also in, but I mean, I really that you rank those up there with the most in Monday Night Football. The pro football has benefited from those three strokes, and it is those three reasons I would say are the reason there is such a cavernous divide between NFL and whatever's number two at this point in sports.
Well put. TD, you had a thought.
Yeah, I mean, I started my NFL career as an intern for NFL film, so that, you know, holds a special place in my heart. But, I mean, just to bring it full circle, Super Bowl 49, awesome, great game. That game was only made better by the lens of NFL films. If you go back and watch the sound effects, inside NFL stuff, it just shows you how great, you know, what they do over there is, and it's pretty awesome stuff.
It is. It's a really special place as well. If you've been lucky enough to visit NFL films, it's incredible. They really do. They keep the history, and, you know, that's what they call themselves, the keepers of the flame. But you go and walk around that building, and there's just so much memorabilia, amazing old stuff there.
So it's great to look back on what the Sables established there, and that is the news. That's what's happening. And now we got to talk about something a little unpleasant. And I Wes, we talked about it downstairs. Didn't know if I wanted to bring it up, but, you know, yesterday, the Around the NFL podcast had an interview scheduled with LeGarrette Blount.
Oh, dear.
And it was scheduled at 2:50. So promptly at 2:50, Wes and I came upstairs to do the interview, and we got up and knocked on the door, came in, and the door opens. And what is the sight, Wes, that we're met with?
Dave Damashek already interviewing our interviewee.
Mm-hmm. And the time ticked by, and we waited behind the glass. And at a certain moment, I tapped TD on the shoulder, said, "TD, we're out."
Whoa. He just – so Dave –
we bailed on the interview because, well, Dave first, hijacked
so
it.
So Dave first, wouldn't pass the blunt.
First things first.
I don't
first,
get it.
I told Drugs. Black Tie to jam something in the door so you guys couldn't get in the first place. So I'm red in the face about you having seen what you
the
saw.
The best part, by the way, and it was a mix-up, and TD had some type of production issue on his end, hitting the wrong button, so nothing was getting through to Dave's earpiece.
Yeah, Black Tie says after – so it starts off, and if I may self-promote – go to
yeah,
NFL.
Why not? You stopped on our interview.
You'll love it. NFL.com. So Shane Vereen and I, we have all the great clips from the Super Bowl, from pregame through the interception. Talked some Katy Perry, what's going on in the Patriots locker.
Which, by the way, all of this is part of the mega crossover podcast.
All right, but there's a video that you can watch. Anyway, so LeGarrette Blount happens along when we get into the subject of who's more handsome, Tom Brady or Jimmy Garoppolo. LeGarrette Blount felt he needed to weigh in on the subject, and so he did. I couldn't be a rude host and tell him no to that.
Sure he couldn't wait to weigh in on this.
Vereen leaves, and Blount ends up sticking around for another 15 minutes. He and I kibitz. We talk about it all because I'm a Steelers guy, and so I wanted to know how he parted ways with Pittsburgh and then finds himself as a Super Bowl champion. I say, Black Tie, if I had to wrap up, I had no idea that the guys were in there, Hanzus and Wessling. What happened there? Black Tie said, I was talking in your ear, telling you to wrap up. I said, you weren't talking to me. You didn't say anything to me. Black Tie says, oh, I was hitting the wrong button.
So that was on me. And that's why, again, that's why
the full-on
crossover is happening. Because, yes, LaFell, LeGarrette Blount, Shane Vereen are going to be part of this podcast episode, part two.
Wow. But also, if you want to talk to Brandon LaFell, I'd be happy to give it.
Also on Thursdays Around the NFL podcast, we're going to be talking to the game-winning player, Malcolm Butler on the show.
Yes, and we're looking forward to that. Yep. The best part, to put a cap on this before we move on, is – Dave slinks down the steps and into the newsroom.
I didn't slink down. I announced it.
You know, whistling Dixie.
I did a victory lap around.
Oh, I just feel terrible about it. I'm watching The Bachelor for the first time this year, which is a really good program. And, like, some of the cunning moves by Dave reminded me of some of the women on that show. It's like, I can't believe this happened. I really feel bad. Sorry, fellas. It's like, all right, Dave.
I, first of all, came down and announced myself as champion. I was finger wagging after I did it. First of all, I didn't slink into any room.
That's not how
it's
I
like
thought.
Coming in from work and finding another man's pickup in your driveway.
All right, whoa. But obviously we got past it all because we're all together in the big old crossover episode, Empty Nest Style, with Richard Mulligan. Let's move
Are
on.
You enjoying The Bachelor, though?
I am.
An episode.
It's a fun
show.
Some lunatics.
Oh, my God. These women are completely
crazy.
Insane.
I mean, legit. I mean, some people with emotional problems. I mean, I don't mean like, oh, they're crazy that they think they can fall in love in 2 weeks and find their spouse. No, no. I mean, people need to be hospitalized.
This is a show that would disgust Wes, even on normal terms. But even if Wes wanted to watch it, he said, hey, Dan, can I come over and watch it with you and Emily? I wouldn't allow it. Because Wes is a man looking for his wife in Los Angeles, and like half the women on the show are from L.A., and everyone's nuts. I don't need that in West.
That cuckoo bird who is the widow, who is bragging about
insane.
My journey has been amazing. Yes, it's had some tragedy, but I wouldn't trade it for – you wouldn't trade having being in your 20s and having your husband die? You wouldn't?
Yeah, drop dead.
You wouldn't give that one away?
Yeah, right. It's a little crazy.
Loon.
I think Wes would make a good bachelor, though. I'd watch
We're cooking with gas.
That is a great idea.
I told you I'm entirely undateable.
And the whole thing.
Will you accept this rose?
That's not true. there's something grossly old-fashioned about it that the women, they're all submissive to start with on the show, and then they all.
I don't
the agreement
like
is that
women.
They must move to, you know, Bumble F Idaho or whatever after the show's over. They would all go to Tybee Island.
I can't deal
Love
with submissive
that.
Women.
Yeah, well, these guys are crackers.
I want to show you my Tybee.
All right, let's take a look. Let's move forward. We'll take a look at the free agent class of quarterback because the reason I decided to write this yesterday is because so many teams in the NFL right now, Hank, that are looking for a quarterback.
Let's name them. Let's
go through.
In case you're a fan and you're listening, you think.
Well, Hanzus has his list of top 10 free agent QBs that I perused yesterday. And frankly, I have a couple issues with it.
Okay,
go ahead and answer.
But I want to know. I think it's good to establish which teams are actually going to be are in the market for these.
I'll go right across the top of our homepage with the teams: the Bills, the Jets, the Browns, the Texans, the Titans, the Chiefs. Maybe probably not the Chiefs. Actually,
not with this bunch.
Buccaneers,
the Bucks.
The Redskins.
The Redskins. You get the point. There, you know, there's a
bunch of teams,
teams
who do need, you need a quarterback.
Teams.
And we let's establish as well in the draft. We probably think then there's one, maybe two quarterbacks who might be able to start next
Rams.
Year.
Rams.
Yeah. Well, people, and I don't consider myself a college expert by any stretch, but when I tweeted out the link to this story, Brian Fisher, who is one of our college 24/7 writers. Wrote, you know, the college crop is even worse than what I wrote about here. So that tells you a lot about it. You're hearing Jameis Winston and Mariota, two guys with red
flags. I like Brett Hundley. I'm not sure why I'm in the vast minority on that one. I think if you cut him loose and let him do his thing, he could be effective immediately.
Okay, so
UCLA QB, by the way.
What?
No.
What?
Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Okay.
I was giving Hank some stage direction. He was leaning out,
apparently,
out of a shot.
Apparently, I'm not in the shot. I didn't even know
wait,
there was
this is
a shot.
This being videotaped?
It's always been videotaped, man.
Oh, wait. We're always on film.
I had no idea.
All right. I wasn't prepared for that. I don't even have product in my hair. All right. Let's move on. The top 10 quarterbacks on my list. And this is, you know, right off the bat, it's a bad spot. And Dave, you could tell me where you disagree. But I have Sanchez 1, Brian Hoyer 2, Jake Locker 3, Ryan Mallett 4. Ryan Mallett at 4.
There, that's what
Michael
I think.
Michael Vick at 5. Those
I think Ryan Mallett should be higher up. I Ryan Mallett.
Complete question mark, though. That's the thing. Like tools alone and size and skill set and all that, maybe. But the guy, he got basically 2 starts before he got injured. So how can you make a case for him?
Because I already have seen what Mark Sanchez is, what Brian Hoyer is. I know what I would get out of them if that's good enough. It's not for the teams that you're naming. I don't think any of those teams vault themselves into legitimate contention by adding Mark Sanchez. Ryan Mallett at least provides, if you are a glass half full sort, the optimism that maybe he will deliver on the great athleticism, the physical gifts he has. And I'll tell you what, I think if he is healthy last year, I think they wind up the Texans in the postseason. That's a great situation if they have a guy with a real whip on him like Ryan Mallett has. Arian Foster and old Andre Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins, the pieces are there. And obviously the great defense. If they can find, you know, I Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett are wildly different characters. But if you are confident that you'll get a relatively clean game, which is to say not turn the ball over very much, the Texans should be very good this year. And that's another team that maybe will be in the postseason ahead of the Denver Broncos, led by number 18.
It's quite a leap of faith you're taking here.
I'm glass half full. I have a sunny disposition, Wes.
He was thought of so highly around the NFL that he went for a conditional 6th-round draft pick in a trade.
I understand. Listen, he had his troubles coming out of Arkansas. There were character issues and all of that sort of thing. And there has been some success with those guys, becoming more mature. Somebody is going to use a pick on Jameis Winston and make the same sort of gamble, but with much more at risk there when you use your first overall pick. Ryan Mallett at this point, I'm sure you get for a bargain, just like the Texans got him last year, but with the high-end potential. There are very few guys on the face of the earth who've ever had a whip like Ryan Mallett.
Henry, do you have any issues with my top five?
You know what? The reason I wanted to establish which teams need them is because I think you named seven or eight teams there. And let's say we do have two quarterbacks in the draft. So two of those teams are going to find a quarterback through the draft and stake their hopes on Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota. My take on your list, which, by the way, thank you. People have been reading it in their tens of thousands since you published it.
You got it, buddy.
I think maybe apart from Mallett, and that's only if the glass is half full, every team who picks up one of these guys is going to be looking for a quarterback again.
It's so true. That's the point.
That's
right.
My takeaway. Yeah. If you stick one of these guys in your
including
offense.
Including Mallett.
Probably including Mallett. But if you stick one of these guys in your offense, yes, you've got a quarterback for 2015. You don't have one for 2016. You've still got the same issue.
And if you thought that top five was bad, this is my 6 through 10 on this list. Christian Ponder, Colt McCoy, Matt Moore, Tavarius Jackson, and Sean Hill, who I snuck up there at West.
I don't know where
West's
you pulled Sean
request.
Hill out of. You might as well.
West said that maybe he belonged there, and I trusted West's football.
He had some good starts last year.
So that's what we're talking about. That is what we're working
on. It was him or Jason Campbell, and I can't take another Jason Campbell check down the road.
And I added 10 more guys. I threw David Spade on the list just because, you know, he could throw anybody once you get to a certain point. TJ Yates is behind David Spade on the list. So it's like, you know, we're dealing with this. And, Wes, I want to tee you up on this. A couple things. First of all, Dave, you did a video piece, which I thought was very cool, where you tried to figure out why we can't find 32 good starting quarterbacks, and you actually did the math. And it's, you know, it makes sense.
I boiled it down. I went glass half full once again. We, you know, why can't we find 32 human beings in a world of 7 billion? When you really get into it, it's hard to even find 20 guys that can do it well.
How can you find that video, by the way?
NFL.com, Dan. Thanks again.
Could it be because we've also found so many human beings who are really good at defense?
Well, I find it hard to imagine that. I think this generation is converting would-be running backs into other positions. I don't necessarily think there are a whole lot of would-be QBs playing defense right now.
No, what I mean is, are so great at playing defense that you're going to need an exceptional quarterback. There are hundreds of people who can play quarterback, and could guys now who can play quarterback and are third string could probably start in the 60s. But because the athletes have gotten better on defense over all these generations, it's harder to succeed as an NFL quarterback.
And before we move on, because we're starting to run a little short on time, Wes, throw out a name that you wrote about on Monday that is not a free agent quarterback and is not in the draft class, but could potentially help someone if someone takes a different look at him.
I'd say ignore all of these free agents and take a chance on Mike Glennon. I've never been a huge Mike Glennon fan, but he's put on tape some pretty good things, and to me he's a little bit better than Ryan Mallett. And he won Offensive Rookie of the Month in November, became the first rookie in NFL history to throw a touchdown in 8 straight games. He's got some good tape out there, good arm. You can probably, if the Bucks draft Jameis Winston or Mariota, you could probably get Glennon for a mid-round draft pick, I would think.
Does it scare anyone that Mike Glennon is the NFL's worst dancer, even worse than Eli Manning?
How do you know that?
Just an assumption, but
I would say I'd actually say he's not.
I put him in the top 2 or 3 NFL quarterbacks who looks the least like an NFL quarterback.
That's one way to put it. That's a nice way to put it.
You see him with the helmet off. It doesn't inspire confidence. He isn't exactly the leading man. Like Carson Palmer, at least. He takes the helmet off. You think, like, yeah, all right, we're good with that guy. Yeah, he looks like he's ready to roll. I like the Mike Glennon call, and I really, to be honest, I don't see a whole lot of difference between him and Ryan Mallett. I mean,
29 touchdowns in 18 career starts. That's not bad at all.
No.
He's got demonstrated production, whereas Mallett does not.
What about, though, you ask about free agents. I'll bring it back to him. What if, I know you say it's impossible, but it's not impossible that John Elway was playing politician there, and we Peyton Manning, we revere him, we definitely want him back. What if they decide, all right, we're going to go with Osweiler. It's just not a great situation. But Peyton says, I want to keep playing. Would you, if you're the Jets, Hanzus, mm-hmm. would you roll the dice on number 18 in that situation?
On a short-term deal? Sure.
The Houston Texans would be a viable
landing spot. Not your money.
What
do you care?
No, I think the Jets would have. The Jets are in a holding pattern anyway right now.
He was interested in going to Houston. At least that was one of the reports, was that a couple of years ago when he was making his decision, Houston intrigued him. Maybe that would be a landing spot for Peyton Manning. Then he would vault to number one.
You just want him out at Denver. You want his career ending. Like,
I do. Rooting interest for or against the man. What do I care?
All right. We got to move on. Finally, let's talk about our offseason forecast, which we're rolling through team by team. We have the AFC East completely up right now. So let's roll through it. And Wes, you wrote about the Bills. And why don't you tell us maybe a macro view of what's going on with this team, what they need, what's coming up for them.
Well, I think one thing since we started this podcast that we've made abundantly clear is that you will never win in the NFL without a quarterback, no matter how good your defense is. The Bills don't have a quarterback. They've got E.J. Manuel, who was benched for Kyle Orton 14 games into his career. So E.J. Manuel's not the answer. They need a quarterback. That's definitely their top priority.
That cycles back to our prior discussion. Right. Who are they going to get?
Brian Hoyer. I mean, like,
no first-round pick.
It's Brian Hoyer zone, and then great, you got Brian Hoyer. What next?
In Buffalo, you have the added problem that you need a guy with, as Damashek would say, a big whip to cut through the elements. I mean, you're not going to bring in a guy with a below-average arm just to get you through a season. So I think that's one problem. And then they've got some free agents like Jerry Hughes, one of their best pass rushers, and C.J. Spiller, who, for my money, should be playing for the Jets, Dan.
I think there's a lot of connective tissue there. I could definitely see that happening.
There is.
And I could see David Harris, who's been a backbone of the Jets defense, ending up in Buffalo with Rex wildly overpaying to bring a 30-year-old linebacker in because he loves him.
C.J. Spiller deserves to go somewhere else. His career has he's flashed so many times
2012,
like he's going to be an outstanding player, and it never has quite worked out.
He was a top three running back in 2012 right. under Chan Gailey in that spread offense. So there's a lot of reasons to think that would make sense.
Well, you know, and I've said this many times before, the ideal Super Bowl, if you have no rooting interest, if you just want deserving fans – Packers v. Bills, it's hard to have any problem with that, or for that matter, Vikings and Bills, I guess really more two long-suffering fan bases comprised of a lot of people who stand by their team and are loyal to them. Bills fans deserve better than this, and I would be I'm so anxious to say 2015 is going to be a banner year for them because I do think Rex Ryan is one of those guys that you're going to get a big spike out of. I think that the team will perform better than it did in the previous year just for his presence. But this quarterback thing is there is no solution there. E.J. Manuel ain't the solution, and whatever else they bring in there, it just seems to me that the ceiling for this Bills team is pretty low here. I mean, I even though I called them interesting before, they should – I mean, the defense should be dominant, but how good can they possibly be? Can they get into double-digit wins? It's hard to see with whoever the quarterback's
going
to be.
Yeah, and it goes – and then moving on to the next team, the Jets, it's the same situation. The Jets have Geno Smith, who's probably going to be in the mix next year whether Jets fans want it to be or not, because they probably are going to want to give him another look unless – they get aggressive. They have the sixth pick. If they believe in Mariota or Jameis Winston, I do not want that to happen. Maybe they bring in a quarterback high in the first round. But there's a very good chance that Geno is going to be the guy and they bring in maybe a veteran to compete with him. I could easily see that happening as well. So the quarterback position is the key thing with the Jets as well. And then the biggest storyline for me to watch, first of all, if they don't bring Percy Harvin back, and that's the big decision, he's owed $10.5 million. Which is a lot of money for a guy who gets always hurt and doesn't have a lot of great tape, let's face it, in terms of over a season, except for maybe 1 year in mini. They have to make a decision to bring him back, and you have to imagine their new GM, McCagnan, also has to think to himself, well, he's not my guy. I inherited him. On top of it, a sixth-round pick becomes a fourth-round pick if they hold on to him this season. So I think that's their big decision. Chris Johnson's gone. They won't bring him back. I think C.J. Spiller will be there. I think the Jets are going to make a hard play. And I really think, and a lot of people are calling me crazy for this, I think Darrelle Revis has a 50-50 shot of coming back to New York. I can see it happening.
What's his incentive?
The Jets will give him an offer that blows everyone else out of the water. And I think he will want to go back. I think he liked playing in New York. It's just the way it ended. It was always about money. He's got his ring now. He wants to maybe go somewhere where he could put down his roots and finish his career. I think the Jets pay him a lot. I think Todd Bowles is a respected guy. I think Revis might see the Jets as being a place of unfinished business that will pay him a lot of money.
But aren't all the people that he was loyal to in New York, they've gone, though?
What, yeah, what, Rex what, was his biggest
well,
camp.
That was his...
Yeah, I mean...
Well, listen, maybe then Buffalo's a better spot for him.
I don't know. I find it hard to believe.
Well, but the Jets are in the same... Remember, when Revis left, the logic was, from the Jets' perspective, this is a shame, but we're so far away from being a contender that it's a luxury that we don't need to possess.
I didn't say it's going to be the right move. Because what's going to end up happening, if it ever happened, they would give him
a
contract that would be richer than the one that they that Revis wanted and caused them to trade him in the first place. It just feels like a very Jets move to make a hard play for Revis.
We're 7-9, but we do have that great shutdown cornerback.
Yeah, and I will say, as a Jets fan who has a lot of close feelings about Revis, I would not be upset about it if it happened.
So what do you want them to do in the first round of the draft? What do you think what should they address?
I know I'm hearing a lot of bad things about Mariota, but I would take a shot on him.
If he over a receiver, over an offensive lineman, over a defensive back, you know, all positions of need, you'd rather take the potentially mediocre quarterback.
Or the guy that saves your franchise. We don't know that Mariota's
No, I don't know, but it's the sure thing versus
Derek
the question
Carr
mark.
Was the right pick. Derek Carr, I said it all last year. Derek Carr was going to be the guy to get.
We'll
let him go all the way to the second round. Think how different things would look if you're the Browns or Bills.
Derek Carr here.
He looks nice. You don't think he looks nice?
Would you
rather have him or any of those free agents that Hanzoos just ran
through? He had an average rookie year. I mean,
he didn't even have
a better rookie year than Sam Bradford had, and Bradford's going to be available.
We'll skip over the Patriots, the Super Bowl champions.
Would you rather have Derek Carr or any of those free agents that Hanzoos met?
I would rather have Derek Carr, but let's calm down on acting like he's already a franchise quarterback.
Revis is
Amari
the biggest storyline in New England as well, Handsome Hank. So that covers the Pats. We don't need to talk about the Pats all the time. You know, Greg's
not
here.
We've talked about them enough. But I would say
I agree.
A lot recently.
So if you're Darrell Revis, you're staying and going for a ring every year with the Patriots. You're not going to the
Pats. I think that's what we'll do.
Let's close out with the Dolphins. Henry, your team. And Kevin Patcher wrote the piece, but I would like to know, Henry, what your thoughts are and about their biggest need and the biggest business ahead of them in this offseason.
Outside of a new head coach, which let's presume that's not happening, I think
you got to wait another 11 months for that.
Right.
Worry.
I think they have some needs on offense. They need a playmaking receiver. Mike Wallace is pretty much a one trick pony. So I'm hoping that they might go and get a big receiver who can, Jarvis Landry was excellent last year. I love him. I know Wes is a fan, but I think they need more help there.
Cut Hartline.
Hartline's gone. I think he's
worst
like
contract.
$5 million.
Brian Hartline or Riley Cooper.
They might bring Hartline back at what he's actually worth rather than what they're paying him.
Right.
But I think, to me, Jared Odrick, who's one of their sort of top free agents, not an outstanding player, but he sort of emerged as a bit of a leader. The problem with the team is they have a massive vacuum, and this is all Joe Philbin's doing. You remember when we watched Hard Knocks, his first season there, he brought in the leadership council. And then if you look at who was that in that leadership council, the leaders on the team, he then cut them all the next year because they stood up to him. And so there's not, it was Carlos Dansby and Reggie Bush and I can't remember who else, but none of those guys
Richie
are on the
Incognito.
Team. Richie Incognito. None of those guys are on the team any longer.
Richie Incognito was on the leadership
council. Yes, he was. I
forgot about that.
None of those guys are there anymore. And there isn't a player like Ryan Tannehill is a polite young man that you'd want to you want your sister to marry, but he's not he doesn't have any dog in him. He's not going to be a guy who picks the team up and says let's go do this. Cam Wake is an outstanding player, but he's not he's sort of on an island himself. He's not really that guy. Brent Grimes is a great player, but not that guy. They don't have any leadership, and that's because Joe Philbin has chased all the leadership out of the building. Jared Odrick's about the closest thing they've got to it. And, I think Mike Pouncey, for what it's worth, but, I mean, he's also maybe not the best guy in the world.
Rudy Hernandez.
Nothing.
Everything, all what just Hank said in two words, body language. That's what you need.
Ryan Tannehill has I'm a very polite young man body language, but he doesn't have,
need some
follow me body language.
A couple of things. You brought up Ryan Tannehill. I'll bring up Lauren Tannehill. Turn me down on an interview request. I don't know if I told you this.
Wow.
I was there. I watched it.
What a hi-hat move from a spouse.
Said, Ryan's agent said that I shouldn't do any interviews. All right, Lauren. Okay. I'm just trying to get you in the spotlight, honey.
I'm the Super Bowl experience guy.
No, experience. XLI
don't you know
experience.
Who I am?
Well, you dropped a honey on her.
Yeah,
that was a little gross. I apologize.
So all this is to say, after the last 10 minutes of conversation, the Bills are going to start Mark Sanchez in 2015.
Yikes.
The Jets are going to start Kyle Orton or somebody like that. And the Dolphins are a hot mess. And the Patriots are going to get to walk into another division title. The greatest thing that has ever happened to Tom Brady, and I think Tom Brady is terrific. Peyton Manning, obviously terrific. But the two things those two guys have had, I don't know what deal with the devil they both made. That they get to play in the bum divisions that they've gotten to play their entire careers in. A couple of times the Jets were all right. The Dolphins were all right. Peyton, a couple of times the Jags were a little bit of a rival there. Outside of that, what a cakewalk. That's both fair. These guys have been handed for the entirety of their two careers.
I will say this because we saw it with Peyton Manning. I know we don't suspect it will ever happen, but it's going to happen. Father Time undefeated. Tom Brady is going to decline. It could happen next year or maybe the year after. This is not going to go on forever. And everybody thinks it is. And
but
Jets
in the
fan,
meantime,
tell you,
in the meantime, the three teams behind the Patriots will finish 8-8, 6-10, and 5-11. It doesn't matter what order it's happening in. The Patriots win the division at 12-4 again.
One final note that Mark Sessler, as we said, lost his voice, could not participate in the show. But he did give a statement that he wanted me to read about the Dolphins.
Okay.
it is titled Dolphins Season Revealed. This again from Mark Sessler at Mark Sessler NFL, Mr. Fancy Pants, as Dave calls him. Henry is a nice fellow, so it hurts to write this. He is tall and relatively handsome for a British individual. But his putrid ghost ship of a football team is headed into darkness.
Wait, sorry, is this the same Mark Sessler who's a Browns fan?
Yes.
That's the end of the first paragraph.
All right, good, just wanted
all right,
to establish
the Dolphins
that.
Will go 5-11 next season, finishing fourth in the AFC East behind the revived Jets and Bills and a Patriots team that will go 12-4. Owner Stephen Ross rewards Joe Feldman with a new 5-year mega pact, while Henry in Culver City is made redundant on the heels of a disturbing in-house controversy involving Tinder, Greg Rosenthal, and improper use of inter-office mail. Oh, boy.
Wow.
That is not good. None of that is good.
Do you guys, you know, we call on, when we're doing out of the same space, the DDFP, we refer to it as Studio 66. Maximum strength!
Well done. TD hit the right button.
You knew that was coming.
When Rosenthal isn't in here, maybe you should call this studio the Factory of Sadness, because your teams, the Jets, the Browns, Wes has the Bengals that are so loathsome he had to abandon them a number of years ago. This really is a sorry lot. It's perfect when Handsome comes in and can start talking Dolphins.
You are a factory of sadness! You are a factory of sadness!
I like to... wow, many.
An echo. There's an
TD
echo in
continues
this factory.
Have button issues. Yeah, I think that part, that's what makes our podcast a little plucky. You know, we're kind of underdogs, unlike the Steelers with the one for the thumb.
Yeah.
And all that malarkey.
I was born into greatness.
So do you have any thoughts, Henry, before we go on Mark's statement?
I don't know why Mark would decide to pick on me today when his team is, as sorry as the Dolphins are, they have a quarterback. And you know, a guy who they can definitely a quarterback who they're going to be keeping this year at least. The Browns are looking at maybe drafting Marcus Mariota so they can have two quarterbacks who are too small.
The Jets, the idea that the Jets and Browns are, shouldn't that be the red flag?
Right.
Hey, who else is looking at Marcus Mariota? Oh, that team? Oh, well, then we can't do it. It's us and the Browns? Oh, it's us and the Jets? Well, then we're out on this.
Do you know
I don't
what
hear
the
any
saddest
good teams
thing
talking
about that
this.
Statement is, every Sunday during the season, I come to work at about 5:30 a.m., and Mark Sessler and I, normally on a Sunday morning, while you guys are all asleep and dreaming of victories for your team,
keep moving.
Sit here and sit in downstairs, and we talk in the newsroom about how sad it is to be a fan of our teams and how today's going to be a little tragic, but just hold your own, and I'll give him a pat on the back, and I'll say, Mark, good luck today. I hope it all works out okay. And then to throw that at me.
Yeah. And to call you relatively handsome. You're legitimately handsome.
That was show-offy.
All right.
I'd also like to say that
I hope he never finds his voice.
It's gonna what your conversation is like is what it's gonna be like for 2015 Broncos fans to be like. And Wes now has made himself a Broncos fan. And at year's end, I'll take a Cantor's pastrami.
We had to go back down that road.
Cantor's pastrami! I'm already salivating.
That's
I'm so hungry for it.
That's it. That wraps part one of our big empty nest crossover. crossover episode. Dave Damashek, thank you very much for joining us.
Sorry I talked.
Always a treat. No, we love when you talk.
Sorry, Hank, I had a fight in
you're the best. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You are legitimately handsome. TD, thank you for your help. So we move
He's
on.
He's like Chris Reeve in Superman 2.
We continue on now to part 2 of the crossover with the Dave Damashek football program. Thank you for listening.